special episode of Plebs on Parade, the show where every pleb is a potential philosopher. I'm your host, Timmy Tether, and today we're on location at the Great Wall of China talking to Chinese plebs about Bitcoin podcasts. Are they good? Are they bad? What do Chinese plebs think? Today we're on the Great Wall of China, just outside Fenghuotai, and for some of our listeners who are xenophobic, I'd like to ask you to please, just for today, put all your opinions about China and the Communist Party aside. These are plebs. Bitcoin podcasts are a pleb-to-pleb electronic signal system. Let's hear what they have to say. Our first pleb is Lee. Lee is from Hong Kong. Lee, what do you think about the Trump tariffs and their possible impact on Bitcoin podcasts in the oldest kingdom in the world?
Hello, Timmy Tether. Donald Trump is trying to tariff a Chinese rice, but with this, the opportunity for Bitcoin podcasts in a China is very rare. I am excited to listen to Robert Breed Ruff and to see my old friend Michel Wickry again.
That was Lee from Hong Kong. Lee is not bullish on rice tariffs for his country's exports, but he is bullish about finally finding out just exactly what is money and seeing his old friend Michel Wickry again. Next, we're talking to Terrence from Pasadena, California. Terrence is back here in China, his homeland, considering repatriating if Bitcoin podcasts are made available in the country. Terrence, what are your thoughts on the Trump tariffs and the possibility of Bitcoin podcasts being uncensored in China?
Timmy Tether, wrong time no see. I am very, very bullish on Bitcoin podcasts in a China. President Xi will never urrow David Bailey and Shinobi content to spoil the Chinese Bitcoin podcasts. No ordinals or shitcoin podcasts. Bitcoin own re.
There you have it. Terrence still has ordinals derangement syndrome, but it doesn't mean he doesn't have a good point. Terrence, do you still have Trump derangement syndrome?
No comment, Timmy Tether. Trump can suck on my balls.
Wow, Pleb3 is also named Lee. Lee is from Tianjin. Lee, Trump tariffs, are they a Trojan horse for Bitcoin podcasts? Are they good? Are they bad? Go.
I am a Chinese podcaster. I am no friend to Bitcoin podcasters. They will disrupt my industry. I support the Great Red Firewall. I would, however, consider making a Bitcoin podcast if the right hardware wallet will be my sponsor.
There you go. Lee, too, is a protectionist, but he would consider loosening his stance if Cold Card or perhaps Bitbox would consider being his sponsor. That's all for this very special edition of Plebs on Parade. I'm your host, Timmy Tether. I am headed to Hong Kong for some succulent dim sum, but I'll be back in the USA in a few days. See you then.
Today I'm announcing that on behalf of the Bugle, I am launching a trade war with Love is Bitcoin. Love is Bitcoin ripped off one of Rod Palmer's shirts, and in retaliation, I am ripping off their entire brand. Libby is an ugly hoe who in no way can compete with me. That is why, in partnership with Orange Label, I have started my own clothing line. If you go to loveisbitcoin.xyz, you will be able to buy the Kaylee Welch 40 hours per week Biddies t-shirt. I'm way hotter, smarter, and just overall am better than that basic bitch Libby. She is mid at best and doesn't smoke cigarettes, listen to 40 hours per week of Bitcoin podcasts, or drive drunk. Anyways, you are listening to The Bugle Weekly, the most thermodynamically sound podcast in the world.
Welcome back to The Bugle Weekly. This is Rod Palmer, credentialed journalist, with my co-host, the managing editor of Bugle News, Richard Greaser. And yeah, if you've been listening to this show for a while and not a noob, you'll know that one of the things we've been talking about is the Bitcoin podcast power law. And the price of Bitcoin, if we want it to go up past the current all-time high of about 108,000, we just need more Bitcoin podcasts. And, you know, Timmy Tether said it right. We need China to tear down this red firewall. Because right now, there is a zero, Donald Trump announced this last week, 0% tariffs on imported Bitcoin podcasts from other countries. But there is a 100% plus tariff on Bitcoin podcasts going into China because of this firewall. You might have to have your own Meshtido network. You might have to be a part of the Meshtido Telegram to learn how to get a Bitcoin podcast from the United States and China. And that's just, there's no percentage on it, but it's just a tariff on your time and on your user experience level to be able to get a Bitcoin podcast in China. And that's holding it back. And if we want an Omega Candle, we have to get Bitcoin podcasts into the Chinese market. Elon Musk knew this. That's why he got Tesla into China. All the billionaires, they simp China because they need to get their products in there if they want their stocks to go up. And Bitcoin's the same. Donald Trump, this is why we need to support the tariffs. Donald Trump understands this. And Donald Trump is now negotiating a new Bretton Woods system where Bitcoin podcasts tariffs were going to be reciprocal. There's going to be 0% tariffs on Bitcoin podcasts coming into the United States. Then there needs to be a 0% tariff on Bitcoin podcasts going into China. And this is how we're going to be. Look, we've run out of neighbors, coworkers, people at church, our friends and family to try the orange pill, to try to start a Bitcoin podcast. It's working on the margins. But right now, Bitcoin is like a developed nation. You're going to have to put a lot of growth in just to get 1% growth year over year. China is the heart of the global South. You get a billion new Bitcoin podcasts in China, the growth is going to be exponential and Bitcoin's going to go through the roof. And so that's why I support this. Mr. Xi, tear down this red communist firewall. We need an orange pilled trade agreement, a new Bretton Woods. That's what this new Bretton Woods is. I have to support it. Richard, how are you doing? What do you think about this trade war and about this necessity to get Bitcoin podcasts into the Chinese, maybe we need to call it Dragon Candle. I don't know.
Well, one of the things I'm concerned about is I think the Chinese will outpace, if there's actually a free market for Bitcoin podcasts, I think China, they have these giant influencer farms over there where they have all the Asian ladies sitting in the cubicles all right next to each other influencing. And if they see the opportunity to seize on doing Bitcoin podcasts, like we're going to see Fountain, it's just going to be entirely Chinese Bitcoin podcasts. So there's a real question of how do American Bitcoin podcasters compete with the Chinese effectively? That's one of my first concerns.
And this is, time is a flat circle. This has been the concern and the fear every time a Western country has gone to liberalize relations with the Chinese government. It is then that the Chinese are going to work harder and they're going to listen to more Bitcoin podcasts than the United States and American Bitcoiners and Canadian Bitcoiners. But I think all we have to do is just make the part of the agreement that they can't listen to Bitcoin podcasts in a sweatshop. As long as they can't listen to Bitcoin podcasts in a sweatshop, they won't have time to defeat us. They smoke our cigarettes, so maybe they'll try and make up for it there, but it's going to be difficult.
This seems like a very precarious geopolitical. It's risky. It's risky for the U.S. and their foreign policy to be trying to promote Bitcoin podcasts in China.
It's kind of like the climate hysteria. People are worried that progress is going to lead to the destruction of our way of life. And some of us are worried that if Chinese people outpace us in listening to 40 hours per week of Bitcoin podcasts, it's going to destroy our way of life. It's like people criticize Elon Musk for trying to get us to the moon. But we have to keep pushing. We have to keep growing and we have to take risks for us to get, to this Valhalla, to the citadels by hyper-Bitcoinization. And we want the price to go up. If we truly believe that it's NGU at all costs, we have to take risks and we have to get Bitcoin podcasts into China.
For those that are afraid to compete with the Chinese directly head to head, here's a few things that you have to know. It is. The Chinese like to work hard. They typically like to work harder than Americans. So you being lazy is not an excuse anymore. You got to get your shit together. The Chinese also like to smoke cigarettes. So you claiming that you're, you know, being healthy or whatever bullshit that you're saying and not smoking cigarettes is not going to cut it anymore. But the thing underlying both of those things is the Chinese smoke really shitty cigarettes. The American cigarettes are significantly better, meaning that American podcasters smoking cigarettes to compete with the Chinese are going to have an edge in that regard because they don't have Marlboros in China. Now, I'd be concerned about that issue directly if Marlboro is given the go-ahead to start exporting into China. That might be kind of problematic, but I just don't foresee that happening because I think the Chinese, they just have weak sensibilities when it comes to cigarette smoking. They like their shitty cough syrup cigarettes.
This is something that a lot of normies are going to have to deal with. We're making this deal. We're bringing manufacturing, we're bringing factory jobs back to the United States in this trade deal with these tariffs. And people are complaining. They're like, well, I don't think Americans want to work in sweatshops. I don't think Americans want to work in hot, dangerous factories, 10 hours per day, instead of, you know, sitting at jobs where they can listen to Bitcoin podcasts and not worry about getting their hand ripped off or their fucking leg chopped off in a compressor. But if we're going to get Americans to agree to go back to these conditions, we're going to have to. I mean, what the whole point of this is like, we're going to make America great again. We're going back to the good times. Well, the good times were not just factory jobs. The good times was being able to smoke cigarettes inside at your factory job. The good times is being able to smoke cigarettes on an airplane. The good times is being able to smoke cigarettes at home or in your car with the windows rolled up or you're taking your kids to school. The compensation package that the other half of America is going to have to accept is that, yes, non-credentialed right-wingers are going to have to work in hot, sweaty factories again, but we're also going to have to smoke cigarettes at Outback Steakhouse in the same building together. We're not going outside anymore. You're going to have to smell my cigarette smoke when you're eating your Bloomin' Onion. That is part of making trade-offs.
Yeah.
But, you know, this tariff thing is developing, and we will see the progress being made by, you know, Bitcoin podcasters will be the first to report this. We will be able to see the analytics on our podcast dashboards and see when the little dots are lighting up in China as more podcasts are reaching into the Chinese government. And we will have, because of this data, the most alpha. So if you are looking for, hey, is the Bitcoin price going to go up? The only person you're going to be able to know this from is a Bitcoin podcaster, because we are the ones that have the analytics to see the podcast growth taking place in China. So that will come. But the topic du jour, or the topic of the week, everybody's been talking about this, even if they don't know what's going on with Trump and tariffs, is the debate between Richard Griesser and Mike Brock. And this was your debate. This was your Mona Lisa, Richard. I'll let you frame how we address this discussion, but I think a lot of people were really impressed by your performance and would like to hear your recap of what happened.
Yeah. So a little bit of context, before I go into that, I just want to say real quick, like people that are upset about sweatshops coming back to the United States, we need a place to put the NPCs. The NPCs need jobs. They're automating fast food and grocery store jobs out. So the NPCs are not going to be able to work there anymore. It, like, when I say NPCs, I'm talking about the future of the people that are not capable of listening to 48 HPW, that refuse to listen to Ayn Rand. And I think it's people like Mike Brock. Mike Brock is a good candidate for sweatshop worker due to his refusal to actually be a sentient human being. But yeah. So Mike Brock, he's a sophisticated philosopher. He is a very well-read historian. He's a self-described scholar. when it comes to the Constitution. And he challenged me to a debate. He challenged me to a debate because I told him that he sucked. And he didn't have a valid opinion because he didn't listen to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week. And that upset him on Twitter. So he challenged me to a debate. And so we debated.
Before we get any further, this is what I think, if you're not aware of this debate and you don't know what happened, this is the crux of it. Richard Griesser called out Mike Brock about not listening to 40 hours per week, and Mike Brock went crazy. So we build up to this debate. And from my perspective, Mike made this big deal about not listening to 40 hours per week and then proved exactly why you need to listen to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts per week. He made Richard's point for him. And so the debate builds up. You ran it on Zap.stream, right? And on Twitter, and then he ran his over Substack. Like, what was the setup here? Because it was two separate audiences, and the comments the comments on the side of Richard Griesser were a little bit more decentralized, naturally. They were in group chats, Signal, Telegram, but also on the timeline. Whereas Mike Brock's were kind of segregated in his own platform, and the reactions to this debate couldn't have been more different. But I'll let you explain further.
Unfortunately, I couldn't get Zap.stream to work. That was...
to nobody's surprise.
Well, it usually works, but I guess whoever is developing it over there, they've been listening to me talk about how the revolution will not have good UX, and so...
to quiet quit.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I streamed it on Twitter, and then I put the audio, the recording in our podcast feed, and we got a lot of listeners commenting on it there. I don't know. It was a good time. It was fun. Yeah, your description of Mike proving my point. So the way that I framed the conversation or the debate right off the bat is he wanted to argue about a bunch of things that didn't matter. And I think that the thing that mattered that I wanted to drive home is that he was like an Ellsworth Toohey type character from the Fountainhead. He was an Ayn Rand villain, and I'm being the John Galt of journalism, I'm an Ayn Rand hero in the story.
Right.
And the entire debate after that going forward was essentially exactly that. He was just parroting Ellsworth Toohey talking points, and I was schooling him on Randian philosophy, which he claims he had read, but I don't really know how much he'd actually read of it.
The topic was Ayn Rand, but the original allegation was you don't listen to enough hours of Bitcoin podcasts. So Mike Brock showed up to the debate, and he explained to Richard how sophisticated he was, but he also enumerated every single topic: philosophy, praxeology, Mises, Rothbard, Hans Hermann Hoppe, all these different characters, all these different doctrines of thinking, and how much experience he had in all of those different philosophies. But this was a debate about listening to Bitcoin podcasts. So he did his research in all of the wrong. He was so distracted by noise and so almost like a mental shield over his brain to like cast out signal. So only noise gets into his brain, no signal. And he tried to explain why that was better than at consuming the most noise instead of the signal. And he proved the point, which was you can have a PhD in every college, you know, degree program from Harvard, but if you don't listen 40 hours of Bitcoin podcast per week, you're just not prepared for the world we live in today.
Yeah, pretty much.
You made a great point. You said, I, as a father, have to show up for my wife, my children, my family. And I do that by listening to 40 hours per week. And Mike Brock's not willing to do that.
No, he's not. He's the type of guy that rests on his laurels. And this is like one of the things that a lot of people get wrong. They think that they go to college, they get their credentials, and they're set for life. It's just easy cruising after that. And it's not the case. Getting your credentials is just setting the foundation upon which to build a house. But you're not done building the house after you build the foundation. Like, once you build your house, you have to regularly keep up with it, right? You gotta mow the lawn on a regular basis. You gotta pull the weeds out of the lawn. You gotta repaint the white picket fence. You gotta take care of the roof. You gotta clean the house, or hopefully have your wife clean the house for you and do the dishes. You gotta keep up with it on a regular basis, and that's what the 40 hours per week are. And if you don't do that, and you just rest on your laurels, rest on your credentials, the house is going to fall into disrepair. It's going to fall into disrepair. And Mike, what I exposed is that Mike's house was in complete disrepair. It was in chaos. He didn't smoke cigarettes. He didn't read Atlas Shrugged twice a year. We were talking last week on the show about like how people that don't listen to 40 HPW, they're like middle schoolers, right? So like, we're like LeBron James, we're like the Michael Jordans of the world. Those of us that do the proof of work, we are the top tier, the top of the top when it comes to the intellectual luminaries in this world. And there's all these other people that think they're on top and that they're sophisticated and that they're smart. And we just have to dunk on them. We have to teabag them. We have to ridicule them. We have to just like expose them.
It's a stress test. So people nowadays, what resting on your laurels translates to is resting on your credentials. Back in the Middle Ages, there was no digital record or bookkeeping that you could carry your credentials. Credentials are a their asset. You couldn't show somebody, I'm a credentialed bridge builder, I'm a credentialed engineer. So the king or whoever ruled the quote unquote polity at the time, they would make the engineer sleep under the bridge they just built for 6 months every night. So if that bridge was not made to the proper specifications and was not stress tested, and somebody drove over that bridge, the bridge would collapse and kill the engineer. So to say there was no credentialed bridge builders in the Middle Ages was true, because if you didn't have the actual credentials that you needed to build a bridge, you died under it when it collapsed on you and you were supposed to sleep underneath it. But now, because you can transfer credentials, people rest on them. They don't stress test their credentials on a constant basis. So instead of resting on their body of work, they rest on their credentials. And if it's not stress tested, it collapses under any form of challenge. And that's what happened to Mike Brock. He rested on his credentials and it cost him. It costed his reputation, especially in the most important context, in the context of Bitcoin podcast listeners.
Yeah, he didn't do any research. He had no idea who I was. One of the premier journalists in the world, if not the premier journalist in the world.
This was Jack Dorsey's right-hand man. Think about that. The CEO, basically the inventor of Nostr, Bitcoin maximalist. He's got Cash App. He's got all these different Bitcoin themed companies, and some of them even accept Bitcoin for payment. But Jack Dorsey's right-hand man. This is one of the PodConf leaderships, one of the top four seeds in Maxi Madness. And his right-hand man doesn't listen to Bitcoin podcast. Maybe that explains why Jack Dorsey's suite of products don't follow any of first principles. They're not free and open source. They don't accept Bitcoin for payment. It's because all the people he has working for him, he doesn't even expect them to listen to 40 hours per week.
Yeah, I do think it's a major condemnation of Jack Dorsey and the types of people he's surrounding himself with.
Not everybody knows how much power Mike Brock used to have in the Bitcoin space, but everybody knows how much power Jack Dorsey has. And so if you want to know what to think of Jack Dorsey, because he's kind of a He's kind of very carefully uses all his words. He's got a team of professionals helping him know what to say. He's got a lot of Jewish lawyers, let's put it that way. Jack Dorsey can afford a lot of Jewish lawyers, but Mike Brock can't, because Mike Brock is unemployed. He's a blogger. But he used to be Jack Dorsey's right-hand man. And if you want to know what Jack Dorsey's building, go listen to that debate and you tell me if you want to use that hardware wallet or you want to use that financial platform.
Yeah, I mean, there's this real issue, which is, I wouldn't necessarily call it an issue, but I think what I was able to do, I'm happy with my performance in the debate. What I think I was able to do is I was able to effectively communicate why smoking cigarettes and listening to Bitcoin podcasts and reading Ayn Rand is super important. And like, I think there are people that have listened to this show and they've heard me say these things over and over again and they've doubted it. They're not actually taking the action that I'm prescribing. Probably part of the reason why is they just didn't really see a clear reason for why.
Right.
But yeah. In order to understand why, these people have needed the context. They needed the context of seeing like what the alternative is, like who the people are that are vehemently against having some semblance of dignity, self-respect, doing the work on a regular basis. It's easy to be lazy. It's easy to be lazy.
Brock, it's also easy to be lazy. It's easy to blame somebody else. Mike Brock, at the beginning of that debate, didn't say it directly, but he said it in so many other words that he blamed libertarians for his dad's dying of cancer. He thought that libertarians being against smoking bans and making those last as long as, you know, being able to smoke at Outback Steakhouse as long as it did, cost his dad his health. And as tragic as that is, he just refused to listen to the answer, which was, if he would have listened to 40 hours of Jack Cruz podcast, he would know that you can't blame libertarians for lung cancer. It's you can stop being mad about somebody dying from lung cancer and just know that there's a sovereign way to have cancer. And Jack Cruz could have taught you that.
These people are being crippled by their stubbornness and their inability to adapt and change. We live in a different world. It's not the world that Mike Brock grew up in, where you could just rest on your credentials. The world's changing too quickly. It doesn't work that way anymore. Bitcoin has won, and you have to behave like it. Behaving like these Bitcoin podcasters have not been the luminaries predicting the future, that they're not the ones writing the history books, is a very ignorant way to live your life right now. It's a very ignorant way.
Mike Brock suffers from Trump derangement syndrome as well, which is kind of how the whole debate ended up being able to occur, was because Mike Brock was having Trump derangement syndrome on his timeline. And I kind of trolled him and retweeted him and said, you know, took his words out of context in a very obvious way. And he didn't recognize that. And so he got very upset. He thought that, I was serious. And that led to the argument between him and Richard Griesser, which got him to have this debate. But the Trump derangement syndrome is a proxy for unresolved issues with problems with your dad. And Donald Trump is kind of dad coming home. I'm not the first person to make this reference, but dad is coming home and he's coming down to the basement and he's turning on the lights and he's saying, you are unemployed. You can't be blogging and reading Hans Hermann Hoppe and Murray Rothbard and Ayn Rand. And you just can't be reading all. You go out and get a job. At least mow the lawn, change your oil on your car, do something that, you know, reconnects you with the real world and value for value relationships. You can't keep mooching off of your Filipino wife because she's still collecting Social Security from her four previous husbands. Like, you have to be responsible. You have to be self-made. And where that begins is listening to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts per week. And Mike refuses to solve the problem. So he's going to read every other book and listen to every other podcast to try to find the answer. to his detachment from reality, and he's not going to be able to find it. He's doing all this to avoid this thing to 40 hours per week. If he put half as much effort is not to not listening to 40 hours per week, as he put that into actually trying, he would find it's incredibly easy.
I'm glad that you clarified that. I think he'd appreciate it if you somehow explained to him his Trump derangement syndrome, because he was definitely very offended by that allegation.
Well, yeah, he posted that. It's too hard to find a tweet because he tweets so many rants, but he posted an article and then alluded in the caption that I don't even know how to explain it other than he was having fever dreams or hallucinogenic meetings with the gods of philosophy, the gods of logic, the gods of epistemology, the gods of just knowledge in general. And in these fever dreams was asking these doctors, just trying to get an opinion, do I have Trump derangement syndrome? And they all assured him that he did not. So that his critique of that particular news item of that day was not the result of Trump derangement syndrome. And I retweeted it and said, I'm just glad Mike is now seeking medical attention for his Trump derangement syndrome. But so far, he just is in complete denial. And it's going to take a certain rock bottom at some point for him to admit that he has Trump derangement syndrome, but he's not the only one like that. We all have somebody in our peer group, at work, our church, our neighbors, our family members who have that deep of Trump derangement syndrome. And a lot of it comes from COVID. A lot of them really have, which is kind of a fucked up thing, because I think if they would just sit down with us and all agree that Trump fucked up COVID, we could connect on that alone. That's one agreement we could have about Trump. But they've got COVID denialism and Trump derangement syndrome, and it's just a matter of they don't want to admit that the libertarians, right?
Yeah.
But the libertarians have to take accountability for the fact that even though they were right, they did nothing to stop it, and they were impotent and helpless, and instead picked a woke person to run for president to try to capitulate to the culture instead of holding your ground.
Well, libertarians could be listening to 40 Hours of Bitcoin podcast too, and they haven't. They're in the same boat, yep, as Mike.
They're exactly in the same boat.
They might be smoking cigarettes, but they're definitely not listening to Bitcoin podcast, and it's kind of sad. They're too busy worried about the age of consent and arguing about whether black people should be able to go in their businesses or not. Like, that's not right, not a good use of time, in my opinion.
How are you going to litigate really important problems and really important, how do you come with really important solutions for how are we going to live in this polity together with people of different races, these people of different cultures, people of different backgrounds? How are we going to figure out how to live and build and progress as a globe or as a country or as whatever polity you want to gauge it under? How are we going to work together if we're still litigating whether or not it's okay to call each other a retard? It's like, get over it. Get over the fact that Donald Trump says words like retard and it offends you. Like, we have to solve bigger problems. And Mike Brock is too hung up. And it's a result, same with libertarians, and it's a result of not listening to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcast per week.
Yeah, if you... Everything's downstream. Everything in our society at this point is downstream from Bitcoin podcasts.
I mean, you know what? For those of you listening who are wondering why I keep emphasizing polity, it's because Mike Brock's listeners on his live stream were calling Richard retarded for not understanding what the word polity meant, when the whole time Richard was the only one in that debate who understand what the word polity meant. Mike Brock just saw it in a book that he didn't understand, and he repeated it. Mike Brock wasn't telling... Richard accused Mike Brock of just believing what the TV told him, and Mike Brock correctly said he didn't. But Mike Brock believes anything that the book he gets at the university library tells him. And that's where he fucked up. Mike Brock is his more hipster, and he gets his fucking instructions for how to live his life from books. And you don't need books to know how to live your life, just like you don't need CNN to know how to live your life. And Mike Brock doesn't need CNN, but he does. He has to get all of his thinking and knowledge from books.
I mean, one of the things that he kept on trying to argue and prove to me was that he had a higher IQ than I did. And I went into the conversation explaining to him that he had a higher IQ than me, and that didn't necessarily mean that he was correct in his argument. You can have a wider range of vocabulary. I mean, I'm a credentialed journalist. I'm not a genius. I think
yeah,
I'm
and
right.
this is the crux of where Mike Brock failed in a technical sense is, and you pointed this out as well. He didn't do his research. He didn't do any research on the topic at hand. And the other big topic du jour of the weekend outside of the Bugle was the debate between Dave, the comedian from Legion of Skanks, Dave Smith, also a libertarian, and the most credentialed sophist, like basically if Mossad, the United States government, NATO, everybody who supports Benjamin Netanyahu, they need somebody to go into a debate and crush it's their opponent on behalf of the regime. They send Douglas K. Murray, the most credentialed conservative, state debater that exists today, international. And he lost badly to the guy from Legion of Skanks, which is a comedy show in a basement in New York City, not too far away from Pupke. And people are wondering how the hell did this happen? And the problem was that Douglas K. Murray he rested on his credentials. He knew that he thought Dave Smith was going to be shaking in his boots to debate him. He thought that Joe Rogan would be shaking in his boots to have him in the studio. But he was wrong. And he was humiliated by Dave Smith, the comedian, the podcaster, the two podcasters, because he rested on his credentials and he didn't do any of his research. And that's what Mike Brock did. He didn't do any of his research and it got him embarrassed.
There was this meme a while ago. You remember this when everybody was putting PhD in their profile on Twitter?
Yes, yes.
What that was is it was making a mockery of these guys that are resting on their credentials, because there's a lot of them. Douglas P., I didn't listen to the whole debate, and I missed probably the majority of the good part, but, you know, I listened to this guy mischaracterize over and over again the people that he was trying to discredit. He didn't even know their names. He didn't even know their titles and credentials. He didn't know anything about them. So he went on the biggest podcast in the world to try and make an argument. And he believed that he was so set because he had his credentials that he wasn't even willing to do the most basic research on the people that he was trying to criticize. I don't know what this phenomenon should be called.
You see it in other places. You see it more contemporarily, like Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor was the up-and-coming, one of the most fearsome, dominant mixed martial artists in the world. He knocked out Jose Aldo in like the first 10 seconds of their fight. Now, Jose Aldo had been champion for years, multiple different promotions. Nobody could touch Jose Aldo. He was completely feared. And then Conor McGregor steps in the ring and knocks him out in 13 seconds. And Conor McGregor was on top of the world. But then he got rich and he got famous and he started being on, you know, in commercials and movies. He started to be able to, he was rich enough and successful enough to get away with cheating on his wife. He was at the top. And he started losing fights. Once he got to the top, he rested on his credentials and he stopped putting in the proof of work. He stopped listening metaphorically to 40 hours per week in the gym, preparing to take on all adversaries, and he fell from grace. And this happens all the time. A lot of people get to the professional sports levels, or they put out a few rap albums, they go multi-platinum, and then nothing they put out after that is ever worth listening to ever again, because they rest on their credentials. And I think that is the larger, you know, who doesn't do that? Fish. So Fundamentals is going to love that. And Back on the Chain, those guys are super autistic. They love two very super autistic things. But anyways, Fish doesn't rest on their laurels. Cypherpunks don't rest on their laurels or on their credentials. But some people do. And people like Douglas K. Murray, like Mike Brock, that's what they did. They stopped researching.
Well, I think this is a challenge all of us are going to have to grapple with. Is when the market really starts pumping. Once we start hitting, you know, once we get to that point, 2 trillion USDT, when all the things that we predicted, you know, are coming true before our eyes, is how do we not rest on our laurels? Because it, you know, when we're all incredibly wealthy, it's not a struggle to earn cigarette money for families. What's going to keep us continuing to want to grow and learn and listen to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week?
All right. People share that meme that weak men create bad times, but that's where the meme begins. There's no explanation for what came before that to create weak men, and weak men rest on their laurels. So that's where the meme begins. When you rest on your laurels, you become weak, and that's how you create bad times. And it's going to be generations before people like Bitcoiners come back and save it. It's like the fourth turning. It's the beginning of the fourth turning.
Yeah, you have to find new ways to stay hungry. And I think this is a topic that I talked about with Mike Brock, is the importance of entropy in your 40 HPW. Because I think one of the things where people get stuck, they stop listening to Bitcoin podcasts because they're like, oh, it's boring. It's all the same thing. And that's not even remotely close to the truth, because there's so many different types of Bitcoin podcasts out there to be listened to. It's a wide, diverse ecosystem where there's tons of different ideas that you could constantly be exploring. And it, you know, once you get the privacy side down, once you get the macro side down, you get a good idea on these things. Well, you're probably not a polymath yet, so maybe you should listen to Fundamentals Math Podcast.
Yeah, this is where I think people get tripped up, is they get... We're coming out of this funk where society thought that diversity, equity, inclusion, DEI was the solution to our economic, doldrums. And diversity, equity, inclusion is not as simple as just, oh, this person's not Jewish, they can be in Hollywood. This person's black, they can be Little Mermaid. Diversity, equity, inclusion is entropy. We need more entropy. If you listen to too many macro podcasts, then the people who, the advertisers, are going to be able to use AI to just basically read your mind before you even realize it, and just trick you and manipulate you with the algorithm and the content that you're going to be consuming for the future. And if you don't have if you build an entropy into your consumption habits, into your Bitcoin podcast listening house, these new ideas, this diversity, which is really should be called entropy, is going to cause your mind to have to grow. You're stressing your mind. There's not these patterns that are just easy for them to accept. It's like, oh, okay, this makes sense. This is my echo chamber. I don't get any anxiety thinking about this. I don't get any anxiety listening to James Lavish give his base case to Preston Pish about the future of the macro podcasting space. Oh, Dr. Jeff Ross, well, he's a doctor. If he says the economy is going to be okay, I believe him. No anxiety here. But you don't have any sort of stressing. Your mind's not going to grow. You are not going to grow. You need this entropy to challenge your preconceptions. You've got these thought patterns that are just not being challenged. You don't have enough entropy in your Bitcoin podcast listening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you never want to peak. You want to constantly be seeking to grow. You want to constantly be looking to better your life, better the life of your family, earn more cigarette money for them.
Entropy is like TRT. Your body stops being, you know, you have the curiosity and the open mind of a child spirit or whatever, but you run out of that as you grow older, and entropy is like TRT to make you so you never peak.
Your brain needs to hit a certain point of hypertrophy on a regular basis, and
it's not just about fasting and sunlight. You need entropy.
I'm trying to think of, I mean, it was pretty funny seeing the responses to the debate. Mike Brock was all excited. Like, I think he thought he was going to do a number on me. He thought it was going to be like a T-ball home run. He's going to tee me up. He's going to school me. He thought he was he was way more sophisticated because I was a journalist and he was a philosopher, which is an easy mistake to make.
It was MMA. But,
you know, I think most, you know, masculine men have read The Art of War by Sun Tzu. And they like to reference the artwork. Like, real high T men, they like The Art of War a lot. And one of the things in The Art of War that is discussed there is actually understanding your enemy. And when you're debating, it's an adversarial environment, and you have to do research on the person. And I did my research on Mike. I've been following him on Twitter for a little bit and seeing his posts. But I went and listened to some of his interviews and the podcast that he did, and I read his work, and he didn't read a single thing that I wrote. He didn't read a single thing that I wrote.
He didn't listen to any of our podcasts.
Hopefully he's listening now. I mean, I think I gave him a pretty good case for why he should listen to 40HPW. And men are just people in general that have very weak egos. They have very low self-esteem. When they get trounced by somebody else, instead of looking to change their mind, they oftentimes just double down and just continue to, they go deeper into their safe space instead of actually doing some self-reflection.
They retreat into that comfort zone.
And we just have to accept that, you know? Like, well, but for the people, yeah. for the people listening to that interview, I bet you Amazon, the amount of books that were bought on Amazon, how many people bought Atlas Shrugged? I bet it was a record-breaking number.
Huge. This all, again, harkens back to entropy. And it's like martial arts. Mike Brock, he's been studying Taekwondo. He's been studying Kung Fu, and he gets all of his information from these old college books. And those old college books it's the narrative that, you know, the state and the powers that be wanted to get published and preserved throughout time. All the challenging ideas, all the conspiracy theories of those days, those were censored out, and you only got the mainstream narrative and the select few contrarian controlled opposition narratives that they wanted to wet through for you to compare them against. And that's all Mike's ever read. He has not been exposed to entropy. But like we learned in the first UFC, once somebody who's been training in Taekwondo meets somebody who's been training in a real entropy rich environment, like a jiu-jitsu practitioner, where there's just so many different possibilities that you can't memorize every attack vector that's coming at you in grappling. You can't have only three opposing, points of view that were used to craft this main narrative of discipline. You have to be ready for anything, and you have to have a flexible, entropy-rich training environment to be ready for that. And so Mike Brock was like a Taekwondo person wearing one of those foam helmets that Mars Kid wears. And he got in there with Richard, and Richard armbarred him in the first 2 seconds.
I apologize. I'm extremely tired today.
Well, man, I got to run and get my DoorDash. So keep talking. I can hear you, but I'll be back in 10 seconds. Don't pause it.
All right. Oh, yeah. I mean, so one of the things that we discussed on the debate, I don't want to talk about the debate a whole lot longer. The last thing I'll say on the topic is one of the things I discussed is, like, you know, taking regular breaks like twice a year. Like when you're working a job, you're expected to work 40 hours a week. It's kind of like a beta job. Beta jobs, you work 40 hours a week. I think like real adult jobs, you work anywhere between 60 to 80 hours a week. But you get PTO or you get some sort of vacation time, and typically it's about 2 weeks a year of vacation time. And part of the reason why you get that is because you got to rest at certain points. You got to rest and you got to recharge and you got to do things for yourself. And There's something I was explaining to Mike Brock is you should read Atlas Shrugged twice a year. And I think you can, if you really focus, you can read Atlas Shrugged front to back in about a week. You can do it quicker if you want to, if you're really, really committed. But I think a week's a pretty good pace to read it all.
And the important thing to know is Mike is unemployed, and he already said that he doesn't have time to listen to Bitcoin podcasts. He's too busy reading. Well, substitute in that for Atlas Shrugged, he could probably get it cover to cover twice a year before January 6th, and he could go back to writing blogs freaking out about how January 6th is the worst thing ever, but just get Atlas Shrugged cover to cover twice before that in the first week.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, I mean, you like when you're working out a lot, so like one of the things that Rod was discussing is like putting your brain through stress. When you put your brain through stress, when you're working out your physical body, doing your push-ups, doing your pull-ups, like Kit Sats is doing at the gym, you got to rest to recover. You have to rest to recover. And I think like you're working, listening to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week all year. You got to take a couple weeks off at least, or at most. And a good way to take that off is by reading Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah, it's like active rest. People talk about that in the fitness community. It's like you're doing deadlifts and you're doing push-ups and you're doing all the stuff that gets you like the biggest ass and like the biggest chest and the biggest shoulders. But then you have to have active rest days where you just like you run a half marathon. It's just like way less stressful. Like that's what you got to do. You got to take some time off, some active rest in between Bitcoin podcasts and read out with Shrugged cover.
Yeah. Before we like.
Speaking of Kit Sats though. What's up with her these days? You said you ran into her on Instagram.
Yeah. She was one of the first people that followed me on Instagram. So I made an Instagram account and it's been an interesting, you know, most of my experience with the Bitcoin ecosystem has been on Twitter, it's been on Reddit, it's been on Stacker News and Noster. That's where I've hung out mostly. But there's this
basically
whole
basically places where people are not looking, girls are not looking for boyfriends. Mm-hmm. They're not looking for boyfriends on Stacker News, for example.
Yeah. Well, Kit was one of the first people that followed me, which I thought was interesting. So I followed her back. You know, I was like, okay, she's based. She used to post on Twitter and she sells tallow, so that's pretty cool. But it became very apparent to me pretty quickly that she's looking for a boyfriend. And I'm surprised she's not going the Jessica Hodler route of posting about looking for a boyfriend on Twitter, because her engagement was off the charts.
That's a good point. Well, why do you think that is? Why do you think she's going with the Instagram strategy? It seems like Instagram is a much more highly competitive space to find a boyfriend than Bitcoin Twitter.
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, maybe she was getting harassed by the orange shells. Just some orange shells coming after her. I don't know. That's a very good question. I don't know why Instagram would be the ideal place to find a boyfriend. And like, you know, how I'm deducing that she's looking for a boyfriend is because she's posting all these workout videos. And like women typically only post workout videos for a few reasons. One is they're selling their OnlyFans, which Kit seems a little bit more classy than that. They're selling their OnlyFans, they're selling non-KYC feet pics, they're selling some sort of product, and they know that if they're posting out workout videos, they're going to get a bunch of orange cells to follow them, and it's a good sales funnel for them. Or you're posting workout videos because you're looking for a boyfriend.
Well, maybe she's looking for, you know, a certain type of boyfriend. Maybe she's looking for a guy who went to Robert Breedlove's Art of Alpha retreat and got in really good shape and does yoga now. And maybe she wants to date somebody like that. And a lot of these Bitcoin influencers, they want to meet a boyfriend like that. And they move to El Salvador and then they just post Instagram videos of them like stretching or working out on the beach in El Salvador. Maybe that she's going for that type of future.
Yeah, it's a good question. I feel like Instagram's like a pretty KYC friendly environment.
The problem is you can't get zaps from, you know, your followers who like your workout videos, especially if you're barefoot, you know, and it's all gated and guarded on Instagram.
I'm learning about this environment, though, because I didn't really know there was a lot of Bitcoiners on there, but there's a lot of Bitcoiners on there. You've got, let's see, who am I following? Green Candles on there.
Simply Bitcoin is on there, I think.
Mr. G. Yellow's on there. Maxi Club. Jeff Swan. Natalie
Brunel.
Guy Swan. Natalie definitely is. I forgot about her. Let me follow her. Oh, I'm following her. Yeah. There's a lot of people. Walker. I mean, that's not very surprising. Giacomo and Mir are on there.
BTC. What about Camila?
Camila's on there. Brandon Quidham. Nico from Simply Bitcoin. Optimus. This is the one that surprised me. Econo Alchemist is on Instagram.
Econo Alchemist would be great for selling ads for beef tallow shampoo.
Yeah, no kidding. He's got some great hair.
Is Shinobi on Instagram?
Probably as the name, probably not as Shinobi. I mean, it's D++ on Instagram.
Yeah, she is. I've seen her.
Shinobi's definitely on Instagram then.
I don't think Pleditor is. I'm surprised Pleditor is not. I'm not surprised, but I thought maybe that would be a surprising one that you might find on there.
I'm following D now. She likes to post anime pictures.
Oh, yeah. Dennis Porter, another one who's on there. Dennis Porter, he has some good selfies on Instagram.
I didn't realize Dennis Porter's on Instagram. Let me look. Yep, he sure is. Wow, he's got so many selfies on here with politicians.
But yeah, are you ready to go into the boost for Loud from last week?
Well, let's talk about the music. So you got a new song out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a new one called The Orange Pill Blues. It's number two on Wavelake right now. The Orange Pill Blues is about, it's in the chorus, you know, you don't know if you can go back to your old way of life. There's too much entropy. It's gone. And all the fiat that it was built on top of, it's gone. But I need to go back, you know, if you gave me two blue pills, it would cure my orange pill ills. Think we can all relate to that.
Well, you got to pace your red pills. I heard Dave Smith referencing Michael Malice on this one. One of Michael Malice's sayings, apparently, according to Dave Smith, is you need to take a red pill, one red pill at a time. You don't just down the whole bottle at once. It's kind of dangerous.
It's like listening to a Bitcoin podcast on 1.5 speed. That's too much at once. Maybe some people should listen to it on 0.5 speed.
Well, I would kind of compare it to like listening to like five different Bitcoin podcasts at the same time. It's way too much to be able to.
Right. Like that's boomer. That's like boomer level. That's Rob Hamilton level. That's not beginner level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to work your way up to that for sure.
If you know what Miniscript is, you can listen to five podcasts at once. But if you know what Miniscript is, start with a one.
Right, go listen to Rod's song on Wavelake and boost it. I just got my song, Ungovernable Misfit, up on Spotify and Apple Music. If you like to use those music platforms, share it around with your friends. I appreciate it. I think it was a pretty good one. I don't know. What do you think? Should we read the Fountain Boost to the debate? Those are pretty funny.
Well, I think we got some pretty good boosts here. I think we can do the debate one on the next, behind the podcast, maybe.
I'll read them all after we go through these on my own. All right. So, late stage hodl, 10,000 sats. Similar to the old bumper stickers saying, keep honking, I'm reloading. Y'all could print one that says, keep shit coining, I'm reloading. Or as Toby Keith would say, we'll put a boot in your shit coiner ass. It's the Bitcoiner way.
Yeah, there was a time when being a Bitcoin only pled and not being a shit coiner, it was just like more of a real patriotic feeling. I wish we could go back to those days. A lot of people think we wish we could go back to like the Dixie Chicks being opposed to the Iraq War meant that Toby Keith got to beat the shit out of them at the Grammys. And, you know, it was great for its time. but I don't know if that really fixes the problems in the United States. I don't think it solved the problem with our foreign policy. So I don't know how effective it was. But similarly, I don't know how effective being Bitcoin only in attacking everybody who isn't in every conversation you ever have. I don't know how effective that really was. But it really, I wish we could go back to that because it felt awesome at the time.
I heard that Corey Clipston, I kind of challenged him to have a little bit more of a diverse opinion on things, to focus on just some things outside of just going after the shitcoiners. So he reached out to me and he told me that at the Vegas conference, he's going to be standing outside the slot machines harassing people for gambling instead of buying Bitcoin on Swan. So I think that's a pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. If you've ever been to Vegas, you can go to like Fremont Street and you'll see people holding up signs saying that gambling and fornication, those are sins. You're going to burn in hell. And here's a Bible verse. Well, Corey's going to do that at the conference. He's going to be standing outside with a sign that says shit coiners all get rugged. Here's a Swan reference code. Go buy Bitcoin only at Swan and it'll save your soul. So if you want to see Corey doing that at the conference in Vegas, you can find him out there with the other proselytizers.
Yeah, I think he's going to be more targeting the people playing the Bitcoiners playing blackjack instead of buying Bitcoin. That's like would you say that's more dangerous version of shitcoining than buying Ethereum at this point?
Yeah. I'd say if you have $100 to spare, at least playing the slots or playing something in Vegas, at least you know like the odds that you're going to lose. Whereas Ethereum, it's just impossible. You just have to consider it all a wash that you're going to throw it away.
Thank you for the boost, late stage HODL. Yeah, before we go to the next one, I just want to say it'd be pretty credible if Toby Keith was still alive today. You know, as Bitcoin is being seen as a more patriotic thing, hearing Toby Keith write Bitcoin country music, kind of in the same way that he wrote like pro-Iraq war music, would be pretty incredible. But unfortunately, we'll never get to experience that.
Yeah, I wish the CIA would put as much effort into the woke bullshit that they're feeding us, the slop that they're feeding us, that they did into the patriotic stuff. I miss the CIA's patriotic content. That's all awesome. I guess I have to say on that. The next one is from Jason C, and I'm pretty sure this is Jason from Back on Chain Fundamentals Fish Podcast, Fish and Bitcoin Podcast. And if you haven't listened to the last two episodes, I created clips on Fountain of the parts where they're talking about the Bugle. And I think that they probably got the best analysis on the Bugle and Maxi Mabus that anybody else has had, especially any of the people in the triple elite memes, universe in that orbit of influence. Check those guys out. But Jason tweeted 4,200 sats. Dear Rod and Dick, you are killing it. I'm not even to the 10-minute mark of a podcast yet. Sincerely, Jason. So yeah, Jason liked our opening last week. He liked the content. I thought it was pretty good. Hopefully you listen to the rest of the podcast too. But I'm looking forward to the Bugle discussion on the next Back on the Chain. And it's Back on the Chain. I've said Back on Chain before. And Fundamentals DM'd me very upset and told us it's Back on the Chain. So make sure you call it that.
I've been enjoying their podcast. I've been enjoying listening and learning about fish. It's been a good time.
There's a whole lot. It's like Bitcoin, man. You can't learn all about Bitcoin in one Wikipedia page or one podcast or one Netflix documentary. Like, you need 40 hours per week to really get it all in and appreciate it. And they finally did it. Those guys finally created content so you can, somebody can go back and have 40 hours of Fish Bitcoin podcast content per week to really appreciate the similarities and like the unique quirks of both of these phenomenons.
Well, thank you for the boost, Jason. Appreciate you listening. Hopefully, you listen again. Next boost is from Blizza. This time it doesn't say anonymous.
Blizza.
Double boost. Accidental double boost. So 2020 sats instead of 1010, like he probably intended. Condolences to Kaylee. Yeah, Kaylee's had a rough go. And I'm glad she's back. I'm glad she's doing okay. She's getting pretty fiery. She's pretty upset at that Libby girl. That's kind of like the news from Kaylee this week. She thinks that Libby girl from Love is Bitcoin is an ugly skank, I think is what I heard her saying in the Beagle newsroom the other day. Or maybe she called her a hoe. I don't remember.
Yeah. Anyway, hot blonde American babes who Bitcoin, way better than Eastern European babes who shitcoin. The next boost is from way off Cliff Shark. I don't know if I say that right. Richard might know. He boosts 1,000 sats. He said, funny as fuck. Cliff Shark is, that's a dude with Stardust, the heavy metal band. Thank you. It sounds like he's listening to the podcast every week now.
Yeah, he does all the video work for Stardust.
That's right, videos.
I call him Lahav, but I might be mispronouncing it. But yeah, I mean, he's Jewish, which is probably part of the reason why he's so good at doing all the video work.
Oh yeah, you want a Jewish video producer 10 times out of 10. You want a Jewish video producer, or you just don't want to publish it.
I mean, Jews aren't good for everything, right? But they're good for a lot of things, like, you know, accountants, lawyers, video.
You don't want a Jew. Like, if you have a towel company and you're spamming out everybody on your contact list and say, hey, can you leave a positive review for my towel company so it does better on Google SEO? You don't send those links to your Jewish friends, because Jewish people can always find something to complain about, and you don't want Jews complaining in your reviews on Amazon, eBay, your towel company. You just don't let the Jews complain in your replies there. That's the reviews. That's how you sink your company.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want them playing sports ball. They tend not to be the best at sports ball. But, yeah, I mean, we need the Jews. And, anyways, thanks for the boost, Lahav. Appreciate it. Glad you're listening. Doing some killer shit with Stardust and all the video. I'm impressed.
Yeah, you don't want Jewish customers either if you're running a restaurant, because they have so many allergy restrictions. Jews are allergic to everything because they grew up on this kosher diet. So they haven't been exposed to enough entropy in their diet, and so they're allergic to everything. Jews are complaining, give me vegan this, give me gluten-free this. Like, just don't let the Jews have their own deli and serve the Gentiles. Don't be a Gentile shop that serves the Jews. It's not a value for value relationship. They're just too picky.
Well, there's different types of Jews out there. So there's like the Israeli Jews, and then there's the American Jews. And I think you're more so talking about the American Jews, but
Ashkenazis. Like
the one like exception to what you're talking about is Chinese restaurants, because the Chinese, for whatever reason, they don't close on like Christmas and American, or sorry, yeah, like the
right. This is what we talked about this at the beginning. We were worried about Bitcoin podcast getting into China because they don't even take Christmas off. They are still making rice. They're still making wonton soup. They don't give a fuck. They'll cut a duck's head off right on your table on Christmas freaking day. They're always working. They're always working.
Yeah. So what the Jews do in America is they celebrate Christmas, or sorry,
the Jews Hanukkah. Rest on their laurels.
They celebrate Hanukkah before the Christians celebrate Christmas, and all the normal people celebrate Christmas. And then when everybody's celebrating Christmas and everything's closed, they go to the movie theater and they go get Chinese food. And that's like what a Jewish Christmas looks like.
Right. True. But,
yeah. Next couple boosts from Pies. 420 sats on both of them. First one, how about a Bitcoin podcast and Wu-Tang Clan? Anyone interested, get me, bruh. Hashtag 40HPW. Next one, LFG, motherfucker. I love sats on sale, bruh. Hashtag 40HPW.
Now, for those of you who are not aware, which is all of you, we have reached out to Pies about the potential of interviewing him on our podcast, and he's open to it, right? So really excited about that potential. However, Pies asked if we could do the podcast over Signal while he was working and talking on his phone, while he was doing jackhammer work on his job, because he's always putting in work. And unfortunately, until we figure out a user experience solution to doing podcasts off a Signal while there's a jackhammer going on in the background and he's talking on mobile, I think that user experience is just a little too hard for most listeners. So we're going to try to improve the user experience a little bit on that. And then we're going to interview Pies.
I think it's probably possible to do that.
I'm saying I believe it is, but I think not as people just are not as advanced as Pies when it comes to listening to Bitcoin podcasts and overcoming user experience difficulties.
I'll have to ask my wife about that. It does sound pretty complicated. I'll look into it though.
Thanks. Thank you, Pies. The next one is from BTC on board. And he did hashtag 40 hours per week, two lightning emojis for 300 sats. BTC on board, like I said, most consistent booster in quite a while. So thank you for the support, my man. And the last one here is from, this is anonymous on here, but it's from the last two. It is from Chakra or Shaka. C-H-A-K-A, and that they boost 142 sats with no message. So thank you, Chaka. And the last one is from Noster Gang. Noster Gang boosts 100 sats and, oh yeah, 40 hours per week. And Noster Gang's also reached out on Noster to ask if there will be any purple 40 hours per week yurts, because they are interested in the purple one because they like Noster so much. So we're going to check with our Jewish lawyers and our Vietnamese sweatshop employees. And if they can do purple in the drop shipping app, we'll send you, we'll get a 40 hours per week purple Noster Gang approved t-shirt on the website.
Slick. That's a very interesting request.
Noster purple is taking over. Maybe that's the color of the year.
Very well could be. Well, thank you everybody for the boost and for tuning in, and I'll do my my boost section for the debate.
Oh yeah,
following up here.
Awesome. Yeah. All right, Bitcoin podcast. Get them into China. Mike Brock, get a job. And purple 40 hours per week, pending slave organized the union in China, the slaves that do the job. We're making our t-shirts. We're getting approval from the union boss. We'll get them on sale.
All right. I'm going to go through the boost from the debate. 128,000 sats. Pretty good performing episode. Thank you, everybody, for the boost on this one. It was a fun debate. We recapped it a little bit earlier. I'll just go through the boost and do some commentary on it. 24,000 sats from Avi Burra. The world is not ready for this caliber of credential journalism. You know, the world often isn't ready for change, but that doesn't mean that the change shouldn't happen. I think this is like why I like Randian philosophy so much, is because it's, I think a lot of what people preach generally in society is this attitude of conformity and just conforming to other people's belief systems. And Rand is like, no, you should be a wrecking ball. Just be an absolute wrecking ball. Just go demolish all the previous systems, and just, no matter what the cost is to you, like, your integrity is what matters at the end of the day. And that's my philosophy with what I'm trying to do. And I don't really give a shit if the world is ready or not for this caliber of credential journalism. We're going to bring it. We're going to bring it, and we're going to body slam these guys. Next boost from Fundamentals, 21,000 sats. Mike Brock is intellectually dishonest and willfully won't listen to 40 HPW, and yet Richard still took the time and treated him like a cognitively viable opponent. The future is 40 HPW. Overeducated influencers who refuse to do it will be vanquished. Yeah. Yeah, we talked a lot about that in this episode. It's very, very self-apparent that the Mike just wasn't there. You know, he wasn't there. He wasn't ready to put in the work. He wasn't ready to, he just was completely unprepared. He thought he was a mental giant, and I just body slammed him because of my background in podcast listening. That's what I credit it to. I put the work in. He did. Thanks for the boost. 13,939 SAS from Shadrach. Go commit an act of selfishness and buy your wife a nice gift. It feels great. Hashtag 40 HPW. Learn me this. Not college political science. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because there's like this attitude around, like, I guess we'd have to redefine the word selfishness because there's such a negative connotation. And I don't think it's like the best word because selfishness more describes people that are short-sighted in their decision-making, but it's a good word because it's provocative. It's a good word because it's provocative and it makes people think, you know, because you're essentially taking something that is considered to be taboo or like bad in our society and you're presenting it as good. And that's very provocative and kind of jarring to people. And you saw Mike get jarred by that. Like I think he's a very selfish person. I think he's a very short-sighted person. And when I use selfish, I mean in the bad way, you know, because he has this idea of the world that he wants to hoist onto other people and enforce it through coercion. He wants to prescribe how he thinks other people should live to them. And it's not really my political philosophy or just personal philosophy. I just don't really care because I think people have the right and they have the duty to determine things for themselves. It's their duty as individuals to actually think and determine for them what is true and what's important to them. And I just don't really believe in dominating other people because unless, you know, it's a political debate, like, but I don't believe in dominating people through coercion because I just don't see how it's really productive trying to control people because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get my shit in order. I'm focused on myself, focused on my family, trying to build something here and focusing on other people and what they're thinking and trying to dominate them gets in the way of that. You know, I find people out there that are aligned with what I believe and we build together. And that's what consumes my time, not thinking about what other people are doing. And that's what brings me, you know, gratification and makes me feel good. It makes me feel good to be doing this stuff, to be doing things that matter to me. And instead of just, you know, freaking out and focusing on what everybody else is doing and that they think differently. You know, there's a lot of people that think differently. There's people that dye their hair blue. And my stance is generally I don't want to associate with you. That's about it. If you're happy because you dyed your hair blue, then good for you. I don't really care. I mean, if you dyed your hair blue and you listen to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts and you read Ayn Rand twice a year, read Atlas Shrugged twice a year, I don't want to hang out with you. But yeah, I mean, this attitude of selfishness that I'm describing is just like you focus on yourself instead of focusing on everybody else. Because the problem with focusing on everybody else and getting upset all the time is that you fail to look at what's going on inside of you. That's the thing you can really control at the end of the day. You can control yourself. You can't control other people. But if you're so wrapped up in what everybody else is doing, you're not going to be able to be making any meaningful progress. You're just going to be kind of stuck and lost in the weeds. And there's no reason to get lost in the weeds because there's like our lives are so short. There's only so much that you can accomplish in the short time. And I mean, what do you want to do? You just want to be exhausted all the time because you're just thinking about how everybody else is different than you and wrong. And all you can do is consume Netflix and take SSRIs. Or do you want to be, you know, focused on listening to Bitcoin podcasts and building cool things and smoking cigarettes? It's like choice is up to you. Like, do you want to be able to please your wife? You know, and be a good parent to your kid? Like, what do you want to be focusing on? So, I mean, that's kind of what I mean by selfishness is it's just like you actually determine what's valuable to you, what feels good, and then you pursue it. instead of doing what you're supposed to be doing, instead of trying to live into this idea of the common good that people like Mike come up with, like how do you know what the common good is? Like, how do you know what's good for anybody else? What gives you the right or the qualifications to be able to determine that for other people? I don't really think you can. I mean, you can look at people and say, hey, you're retarded and you're making bad decisions and self-sabotaging pretty apparently. But to say everybody should live this way or everybody should live that way, like, we're all different. We're all different. We all want different things. We're diverse population, got different skill sets. We come from different backgrounds. Some of us are Jewish. Some of us are not. Some of us are good at sports ball. Some of us are good at smoking cigarettes. Like, you know, we're all good at different things. And the things that we're good at, we should pursue because it feels good to be competent and successful. We're not all the same. So how can we dictate to others what to do? The things I say are suggestions. And the things I think I suggest are beneficial. And I think I display them as being beneficial. Like, you can see the benefits of me listening to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week in my life. I try and display that. I displayed that well in this debate by trouncing him. Next boost from a chronic 10,000 sats. This deserves more sats. Ha 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 ha. Thank you. Shadrach again. Sit outside, stare at the night sky while smoking a cigarette and ask yourself, am I a sentient being? Or am I an NPC? I just think that's a good practice. It's a good practice to look at the sky. You might see a UFO. You might see the aliens. You're not going to see the aliens when you're sitting inside looking at Netflix. But yeah, I mean, this is the question of, like, just having general self-awareness. Like, you ask yourself if you're an NPC. There's so many people that run around. They're all wound up and they're letting everybody else do the thinking for themselves, for them. They're outsourcing their thinking to other people. They don't know what those people's motives are. Generally, those people's motives are not in their best interest. They're outsourcing their thinking to people that are trying to dominate and destroy them. They just see you as a pawn to be manipulated. They don't ask the question, am I an NPC or am I a sentient human being? Why am I a sentient human being? It's a foundational question that you have to ask. Why do I believe the things that I believe? Do I believe it because I was told this in school by a teacher who probably had an unhappy life and was on SSRIs? It was just working for the government to brainwash people. Why would you build your entire worldview on top of what that person told you? Have you questioned that? Have you questioned if what you were told is true and then actually gone to confirm it and then considered other viewpoints outside of yours? If you haven't, you might be wrong. And that could be problematic because if you're wrong, you could be going in the complete wrong direction. It's an important question. Am I an NPC? And you don't just ask it once. You don't rest on your credentials. You don't rest on your laurels. It's an ongoing conversation where you have to be checking yourself and engaging with other people to check you too. NZ, 10,000 sats, no comment. Anonymous, 10,000 sats, no comment. Anonymous again, 5,000 sats. I'm not sure who this is, but Mike Brock went into a tailspin when challenged on basic first principle concepts like, do you smoke cigarettes? Mike should put down his Aristotle, pick up a Marlboro Red, and stare at the stars like a real man once in a while. Also, bro, if your ideas are so good, why do you have to talk over Richard for half the episode? Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, these lefties, like, they like to present, it's called bravado. It's a very common thing where they're not very secure in their beliefs. And the talking over like he did really just kind of showcased his personality and his belief system of trying to dominate other people's. And that's just how he is. He wants to yell at people and yell over people. He's kind of like the scared boy whistling in the dark. That's how I see Mike Brock. He's scared and he's whistling in the dark. Has nothing of real substance to offer. OD 40 HPW 2,121 sats. Richard Greaser nailed this debate. I'm shocked hearing a so-called intellectual denying the importance of smoking cigarettes, reading Ayn Rand, and listening to 40 HPW. It shouldn't be shocking, and most of these guys are terrified of it. They just accept everything. It's kind of a monoculture. And I think this is part of the reason why I don't really like Californians very much, especially people from LA. And I'm sure there's some good ones out there, like maybe Brecky Von Bitcoin. I think he lives out there. There's probably some other good ones too, but it's too much of a broad generalization, but it's an echo chamber. They just all sit around in a circle jerk and, you know, think about how great they are. And they're like, wow, we live somewhere where there's nice weather. That's great. We're so great. We're so smart. We're the peak of civilization. They live in this bubble, and they don't know what's going on in the rest of America. They don't talk to normal people. They don't smoke cigarettes. They don't listen to 40 HPW, and they don't read Ayn Rand. They lack entropy. They lack any entropy. FOMO Chronic, 1,001 sats. Great content. This Joker curses a lot, and in a mildly gay voice. XD. He probably has super, super low T. Super low T. 1,000 sats. Lahav, Cliff Shark, clown emoji. Pies, 420 sats. Mike Brock must be a dumb motherfucker thinking he would defeat the great Dick Greaser in a debate. He didn't do any research. That's the thing and I kind of figured that he wouldn't do any research, but he should have done some research. He should have listened to my podcast. He should have at least had any idea of where I'd be coming from, who I am. He didn't do his research, and it just shows he's lazy. He's intellectually lazy, and he's just lazy in general. And he's like a two-legged stool. You just push him a little bit and topples over. Pies says, I wanted to knock Brock the fuck out listening to this. Oh, I don't know how productive that would be. But he's a pretty skinny guy, so I don't think he has much of a chin if he punched him. Fuck this guy, Brock. Fucking ass clown. Get him, Greaser. 40 HPW for life, son. Dave, 40 HPW, says this is art. Pies, 420 sats again. LFG. I can't see who this is, but 420 sats. Mike Brock will never see this. Hashtag 40 HPW. And then last comment, I can't see who it is either. That was some serious advice. Twice a year. Well, I want to thank you all for boosting. And I had a good time. I mean, that was good. It's fun to dunk on people. It's fun to have the opportunity to really showcase that I've been listening to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week. You don't get a ton of opportunities to do that. It contrasted against, you know, people as weak as Mike Brock. I think Rod made a good point. This is Jack Dorsey, who he's got in his corner. This is who he's working with. Pretty lame. But I'm real tired. I got some things I got to work on today. And I'm super, super behind, unfortunately. Got some deadlines. Got some cigarettes to smoke. Got some podcasts to listen to. I want to thank you, everybody, for tuning into this episode. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate the boost. Really appreciate the support. I'm glad that everybody enjoyed the debate. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I apologize because I feel like I was a little bit off. I have been really tired. I have a lot of projects I'm working on and things on my mind. And yeah, I'm going to play Rod's song going out to the outro. Make sure to head over to Wave Lake. Give it a boost. Him and I are in the top 10 right now. We're dominating the charts over there. But the music's only going to get better. That's one of the things I'm working on behind the scenes. But yeah, anyways, thank you for tuning in. We'll catch you next week.
I got me them orange-pilled blues. Listening to podcasts is more stimulating than you. Throw my headphones on and disappear. Well, I ain't really having fun, but at least my future's clear. Don't know if I can go back home.
Listen to what the podcaster says. Stand up straight, eat your steak, manage the clown world stress. The bear market is sure to return. Well, I ain't got enough dry powder to pass their purity test.
Take my God.